Welcome to this walk around Oxford celebrating local poets. We're starting off at the University Church, founded in the 1100s, dating back to Saxon times. This is where university degrees were given and lectures were sometimes offered too. And this is where John Wesley, who founded the Methodist movement and studied at Christ Church, would give the gospel and preach. And he was very much into offering the congregation a physical experience of God. And some of the hymns that he composed are still in play today, particularly one, the Moravian hymn. Oh, draw me, Father, after thee, so shall I run and never tire. With gracious words still comfort me, be thou my hope, my soul desire. Free me from every weight, not fear, nor sin can come if thou art here. In suffering be thy love my peace, in weakness be thy love my power. And when the storms of life shall cease, my God, in that transcendent hour, in death as life be thou my guide, and bear me through death's whelming tide. And he died poor because he was so charitable in what he offered to people. Buried in London, and his brother too, very strong in the Methodist movement. The church is also where William Penn, founder of Pennsylvania, preached. He had a slightly rougher time. He was imprisoned for his religious beliefs in Newgate, and along with debtors and murderers there, he would have been very subjected to a picking of oakum and doing very hard physical labour. And at that time, if you were unlucky enough to be hung, then the church opposite would ring the bell and say, "And Saint Sepulchre's bell in the morning tolls, the Lord above have mercy on your soul." So, moving on. One of the poems written by Hugh Chesterman for Christopher Wren, who was an astrology student here at the university, is "Clever men like Christopher Wren only occur just now and then. No one expects in perpetuity architects of his ingenuity." And much of the architecture around us is designed by Christopher Wren. You can see the sundial there on All Souls College, which was founded in the 1400s by the Archbishop of Canterbury. It's an unusual college because it doesn't have students, only fellows. And you can undergo an examination to have the prize fellow, which means that you have all your fees paid for 7 years. You can study whatever you want to research. Christopher Wren was one such fellow. He also then went on to rebuild London after the Fire of London. And one of the writers inspired by the architecture around us is J.R.R. Tolkien, educated in Birmingham before coming up to Exeter College. And the sundial was the eye of Sauron and the two towers there in his stories too. And he wrote, "All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost. From the ashes of fire shall be woken, a light from the shadows shall spring, renewed shall be blade that was broken, the crownless again shall be king." Unfortunately, on the 7th of June 1915, he was called up to World War I, and where he found a lot of what he saw very traumatic and disturbing, and then worked some of those ideas through his writing. So the college here on our left, Brasenose College, was the last college to have fires, open fires in the quad. And it was where John Fox, the author of the Fox's Book of Martyrs, studied. And also Thomas Traherne, who is recognised almost as a saint by the Anglican community because of his spirituality. And he wrote this: "One star is better far than many precious stones. One sun, which is by its own luster seen, is worth 10,000 golden thrones. O fine, O most divine, O brave," they cried and showed, "some tinsel thing whose glittering did amaze, and to their cries its beauty owed. This eye on riches by degrees of a new stamp did learn to gaze, while all the world for these I lost, my joy turned to a blaze. One of the monks that studied here when Oxford was a religious community was John Lydgate of Bury, born in 1390. There's some graffiti in a Suffolk church where he spent the last of his days, his poetry sort of written on the wall. He wrote London Lack Penny, all about there not being enough money in London. To London once my steps I bent, where truth in no wise should be faint. To Westminster Ward I forthwith went, to a man of law to make complaint. I said for Mary's love, that holy saint, pity the poor that would proceed, but for lack of money I could not speed. He did find money though, because he had Duke Humphrey, who was brother to Henry V, as his major donor. Born in 1447, Duke Humphrey left 281 books to the Oxford University on his death, and this was when the university only had 20 books. It was a massive undertaking. At the time, education was just given orally. And so the Divinity School was built to house these books in 1450, and it's been said to be one of the most beautiful rooms in the world. And Duke Humphrey also had property in London on Puddle Dock. He was very generous in the support that he gave writers. And so that helped to found this one of five copyright libraries that is around us, the Bodleian Library. And even royalty, when Oxford was the capital of England during the Civil War, when Charles I lived here, Charles I was stopped when he tried to take out a book from the library. He had to check it out like everybody else. And whilst during the Civil War, the two factions were split, and the Oliver Cromwell very much took over England for a short time, there were a lot of Puritan writers that really sided with Oliver Cromwell. And so when the Restoration happened with Charles II after the death of Charles I, this suppressed a lot of Puritanical writers. Their resources and their popularity decreased, but it really strengthened some of their resolve, because during the Great Ejection, when a lot of Puritan ministers were thrown out of Parliament in 1665, just after that, John Milton, a Puritan writer, wrote his strongest work, and it ends, "They, looking back, all the eastern side beheld of paradise, so late their happy seat, waved over by that flaming brand, the gate, with dreadful faces thronged and fiery arms. Some natural tears they dropped, but wiped them soon. The world was all before them, where to choose their place of rest, and Providence their guide. They hand in hand with wandering steps and slow through Eden took their solitary way." And a girl, Rosie, who was in love with a soldier in the Civil War who didn't come back, is said to haunt this alleyway just here on our right, Hell's Passage. It leads to the Turf Inn. There's been a Turf Inn there since the 1300s. It was called the Spotted Cow, where illicit gambling took place. So either side of us, we have what was Hart Hall, and then became Hertford College, where John Donne studied. In the 1500s, John Donne had a very difficult life. His brother died of the bubonic plague in Newgate after supporting a Catholic priest and then being basically tortured to get the knowledge out of him, and then both had a very sticky fate. This did leave John Donne to question his religion, but he did write some very religiously emotive poems. "No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thy friends, or if thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. We've got the bridge of sighs either side of us here, because students were said to sigh as they went from their accommodation, one part of the college, to the other, to their tutorials. And it's where a lot of filming takes place, and just along the alley here towards New College. There was a lot of films that have been done here, Heaven's Gate in the 80s, and also Quills in the early 2000s. It's used a lot for TV too. And some of the poetry of Oxford has been turned into lots of films. Graham Greene's book, The End of the Affair, inspired by his affair with Catherine Walston, was one. And this was the poem that inspired the book. A mattress was spread on a cottage floor, and a door closed on a world, but another door opened, and I was far from the old world, sadly known, where the fruitless seeds were sowed. And they called that virtue, and this sin. Did I ever love God before I knew the place I rest in now, with my hand set in stone, never to move? And this is love, and this I love, and even my God is here. He obviously felt very strong feelings there for Lady Catherine Walston. And William Golding described him as the ultima chronicler of the 20th century man's consciousness and anxiety. A dramatist that studied at New College, Edward Young, has this poem too, a poem on the last day. Two wondrous days and nights through coral groves, through labyrinths of rocks and sands he roves, when the third morning with its level rays, the maintains guilds on the billows plays. It sees the king of waters rise and pour, his sacred guest uninjured on the shore, a type of that great blessing which the muse in her next labour ardently pursues. The path that we walk along towards High Street has a sort of feeling of a river, and it's quite interesting because Oxford's obviously between two rivers, River Charwell and the Thames, or the Isis as it runs through the city, making a sort of Y, and we're in the middle of that. And this poem by Alice Oswald, a poem for a dried up river, is very sort of reminiscent of how Oxford is put together, sort of built, layer upon layer. Very small and damaged and quite dry, a Roman water nymph made of bone tries to summon a river out of limestones. Very eroded, faded, her left arm missing and both legs from the knee down, a Roman water nymph made of bone tries to summon a river out of limestone. Exhausted, utterly worn down, a Roman water nymph made of bone, being the last known speaker of her language, she tries to summon a river out of limestone. Little distant sound of dry grass. Try again. Very speechless, very broken, old woman. Her left arm missing and both legs from the knee down. She tries to summon a river out of limestone. It's a pitiable likeness of clear running, struggling to keep up with what's already gone, the boat, the wheel, the sluice gate, the two others lacking around. Go on, little loose end, shorthand it represented, beautiful disused route to the sea, fish path with nearly no fish in. Walking towards High Street, we get the feeling of how the city's really put together, because this junction is where the East Gate of the Saxon city would have sat. It would have been inside the crypt, the chapel of St. Edmund's Hall on our right here. So an interesting parallel in London is that Chaucer lived on the Eastern Gate, Aldersgate. He was actually in the 1300s a customs officer. He would have had a good job, and he would have seen the peasants revolt as it came through the East Gate, and he married the lady-in-waiting of Queen Philippa of Hainault, who founded Queen's College just here where we stand. And so the other interesting parallel there is that there was a riot that came through this Saxon East Gate in 1355, St. Scholastica Day riot, when a few students threw some ale over a landlord, where Carfax's now, because they didn't like the quality of the beer, and 3 days fighting took out. 68 students were killed, maybe 30 townspeople. No one actually counted the townspeople. It was on the 10th of February 1355. So whatever Chaucer saw or didn't see, this is something by him. "Since I am from love escaped so fat, I ne'er think to be in his prison taken. Since I am free, I count him not a bean. He may answer and say this and that, I do not force, I speak right as I mean. Since I from love escaped am so fat, love hath my name struck out of his slat, and he is struck out of my books clean for evermore. There is none other mean, since I from love escaped am so fat." Don't know much about Chaucer. We know he travelled abroad. He had a very good income from the king, probably because he was a courtier. And of course his books, the Canterbury Tales even, when people told stories on their way, on their pilgrim from London to Canterbury, and the winner would get a free meal at Tabard Inn, Southwark, on their return. And the good thing with this was that real life people's lives were being documented. And also previously, language had been written about in Latin and French, so English was used for the first time. And being positioned here where I just mentioned there being a lot of riots coming in and out of the city, being the road out of London, out of Oxford, another sort of cause of trouble across the road here at University College was Shelley. He wrote a paper on the necessity of atheism at a time when the university was predominantly Catholic. And so this was very blasphemous. It was one of the reasons that Shelley didn't find fame during his lifetime. He's said to have gone to one lecture during his time here as a student and only would read just for 16 hours a day. He died on a shipwreck in Italy, which is a little bit suspicious because it's thought maybe he was in trouble with the government over his very forthright views. So it could have been that he actually had died before the shipwreck and that was just a cover. But his poetry is here. "The fountains mingle with the river, and the rivers with the ocean. The winds of heaven mix forever with a sweet emotion. Nothing in this world is single, all things by a law divine, in another's being mingle. Why not I with thine?" And then read at his funeral was Ariel's song. "Full fathom five thy father lies, of his bones are coral made, those are pearls that were his eyes. Nothing of him that doth fade, but doth suffer a sea change into something rich and strange. Sea nymphs hourly ring his knell, ding dong, hark, now I hear them, ding dong, bell." He went on to inspire Yeats's work, who then later in London set up the Rhymers Club on Fleet Street. So if you're standing here on May the 1st, May morning, then you get to hear the bells ringing in the May. The bells weren't written about in such a flattering way, though, by John Betjeman when he wrote his collection, Summoned by Bells. His tutor was C.S. Lewis at Magdalen. And he is one of the reasons that we have a very sort of uniform architecture around the high street here today, because Betjeman was a secretary for the Oxford Preservation Trust, who currently is an organisation that's brought back Oxford Castle to life. His family traded in Victorian design, and he had great concerns for architectural heritage and was known to have saved single-handedly some regional hotels. And this poetry reflects that sort of ideal to have architecture similar. Death in Leamington. She died in the upstairs bedroom by the light of the evening star that shone through the plate glass window from over Leamington's bar. Beside her, the lonely crochet lay patiently and unstirred, but the fingers that would have worked it were dead as the spoken word. A nurse came in with the tea things, breast high mid the stands and chairs, but nurse was alone with her own little soul, and the things were alone with theirs. And tea, she said, in a tiny voice, wake up, it's nearly five. Oh, chintzy, chintzy cheeriness, half dead and half alive. Nurse looked at the silent bedstead, at the grey decaying face, at the calm of a Leamington evening drifted into the place. She moved the table of bottles away from the bed to the wall and tiptoeing gently over the stairs turned down the gas in the hall. I think that is my favourite poem, almost of all time. I love that poem. And so John Betjeman not enjoyed his time at Magdalen, unlike Oscar Wilde, who had the whale of a time while he was here, but then life changed a little bit when he graduated. He was very decadent, it was said. He had a room overlooking the river. And so, walking along the Rose Garden here now, just opposite, where sadly a lot of the Jews of Oxford were all buried in the 1300s in not ideal situation, with the monarchs Edward I, Edward III, which was a very difficult time in Britain to be Jewish. And the Rose Garden is there to commemorate them. Walking along the river, if we followed it even further towards Reading, then we see where the end of the incarceration for Oscar Wilde. And thankfully, Richard Haldane in 1895 argued for Oscar Wilde to be released from Newgate, where he was picking oakum, doing hard labour. He'd then gone to Pentonville and then to Wandsworth, to somewhere a bit easier, which was Reading Jail. He wasn't known by his name there. It was C33, because it was Ward C, Room 3, Level 3. He was spat at when he was transferred. He wasn't allowed pen and paper, but some were smuggled in. All he was given to read was the Bible and Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. And he wrote this. In Reading Jail by Reading Town, there is a pit of shame, and in it lies a wretched man eaten by teeth of flame. In a burning, winding sheet he lies, and his grave has got no name. And there till Christ call forth the dead, in silence let him lie. No need to waste the foolish tear or heave the windy sigh. The man had killed the thing he loved, and so he had to die. And all men kill the thing they love. By all let this be heard. Some do it with a bitter look, some with a flattering word. The coward does it with a kiss, the brave man with a sword. Which is a really strong thought, I think. So, Oscar Wilde went on to write lots of amazing plays that we still love and perform today. So moving further along the river, which was the Withywindle River in J.R. Tolkien's writing. The college here, Christchurch, is where W.H. Auden was a tutor. And the pathway that we're walking along was being where Henry VIII walked, because Christchurch was originally known as Henry VIII College. It was then given to Wolsey because Wolsey had become the favourite of Henry VIII. But when Henry couldn't get his divorce, then all of a sudden Wolsey was not in power, and this was then called Christchurch. But Catherine of Aragon would have also walked close to here, because we know she visited the principal of Corpus Christi in the 1500s. So this is my selection of a W.H. Auden poem that kind of fits that love story, the love stories that would have happened on Christchurch along the little winding lanes. Looking up at the stars, I know quite well that for all they care, I can go to hell. But on earth, indifference is the least we have to dread from man or beast. How should we like it with stars to burn? With a passion for us, we could not return If equal affection cannot be, let the more loving one be me. Admirer as I think I am of stars that do not give a damn, I cannot now I see them say, I missed one terribly all day. Were all stars to disappear or die, I should learn to look at an empty sky and feel its total dark sublime, though this might take me a little time. The little pathways that run through were also used by Charles I and Henrietta Marie during the time that this was where the king lived during the Civil War, when Oxford was the capital of England. And also the pathways were used to entertain the children of the Dons and Lewis Carroll, which was the pen name of Charles Dodgson, a shy and retiring mathematics Don here at Christchurch. He would tell stories about these different paths, and this is a poem by him, The Mad Gardener's Song. He thought he saw an elephant that practised on a fife. He looked again and found it was a letter from his wife. At length I realised, he said, the bitterness of life. He thought he saw a banker's clerk descending from the bus. He looked again and found it was a hippopotamus. If this should stay to dine, he said, there won't be much for us. He thought he saw an argument. He proved it was the Pope. He looked again and found it was a bar of mottled soap. A fact so dread, he faintly said, extinguishes all hope. Which kind of sums up the whole religious angle, two ways of looking at it there. So opposite now, just past the gardens here, which were founded to commemorate the men that were lost during the World War I. Samuel Johnson was a student at Pembroke College, didn't finish his degree. He tried to make it work by being a sort of servant to other students, which must have helped him, you know, to a certain extent. But he eventually did write the Oxford English Dictionary, but didn't get rights for it, paid for rights. He only got paid for the work he did, even though some of his work is still being used today. He was a very generous man. It's believed he had Tourette's because of all the tics and affectations. And he became friends with the poet Richard Savage and sort of helped him as much as he could. And this is a poem by Samuel Johnson. I put my hat upon my head and walked into the Strand, and there I met another man whose hat was in his hand. Hermit or in solemn cell, wearing out life's evening grey, strive thy bosom sage and tell what its bliss and which the way. Thus I spoke, and speaking sighed, scarce repressed the startling tear, when the hoary sage replied, come my lad and drink some beer. So that's the end, except a mention to William Shakespeare, who attended the christening of his godson, which was William Davenant, at Carfax, right at the top of the road here. And so, to celebrate the close of the Christmas season, the 12th night, we have a song. When that I was and a little tiny boy, with a hay and a hoe, the wind and the rain, a foolish thing was but a toy, for the rain it raineth every day. But when I came to man's estate, with hay, hoe, the wind and the rain, gainst knaves and thieves man shut their gate, for the rain it raineth every day. But when I came, alas, to wive, with hay, hoe, the wind and the rain, by swaggering could I never thrive, for the rain it raineth every day. But when I came unto my beds, with hay, hoe, the wind and the rain, with tosspots still had drunken heads, for the rain it raineth every day. A great while ago the world began, with hay, hoe, the wind and the rain, but that's all one, our play is done, and we'll strive to please you every day. Ending with the quote from Samuel Johnson, the chief glory of every people are with its authors. So here's to you.